everyone. I'm Debbie Roberts, owner and financial advisor at Property Apprentice. Join us today for the Week in Review, where I talk about current events for the everyday investor and home buyer. Our topics for this week, topic number one from One Roof on the 11th of March, interest rate relief. Has the government opened the floodgates to property investors? Topic number two, stuff on the 12th of March. How much does state housing really affect property values? Topic number three from the New Zealand Herald on the 14th of March, Labor claimed 346 landlords owned 200 plus properties, but official data can prove only one. Topic number four from Stuff on the 12th of March, here's where house prices dropped at year's start. And topic number five from One Roof on the 14th of March, on the hook for $150,000. Holiday home sellers warned over hefty GST bills. So first up this week from One Roof on the 11th of March, interest rate relief. Has the government opened the floodgates to property investors? The government's recent confirmation of interest deductibility changes benefits property investors gradually with 80% interest deductibility from 1st of April and 100% from 1st of April 2025. However, the impact on the market is expected to be minimal due to persistently low rental yields and high mortgage interest rates. New landlords may be attracted to the market, but existing properties may still require additional income to remain profitable. Gender disparity in property ownership. CoreLogic's Women and Property Report reveals a disparity in property ownership between men and women, particularly in rental properties, likely influenced by the gender pay gap. About 26.3% of rental properties are exclusively owned by men, while only 21.6% are owned exclusively by women. Come on, women, up your game. This discrepancy is likely linked to the 9% gender pay gap, making it harder for women to enter the investment property market. First-time buyer activity. First-time buyers have been active in the market, with consistent participation rates and significant usage of KiwiSaver and low-deposit lending options. Shifts in investor activity may influence this group somewhat in the future, although it tends to be the mum and dad investors that don't purchase like professional investors do, that buy with emotion rather than buying based on the numbers, that tend to be the competitors for the first home buyer group. Approximately 80% of low deposit lending across all owner occupiers goes to first home buyers, with 35 to 40% entering the market with less than 20% equity. So congratulations to all of those new first-home buyers that are entering the market. This is a great time to be a buyer. Lots of listings, not much competition from other buyers, and interest rates are likely to get cheaper moving forward, whereas purchase prices are likely to increase moving forward. Rising rents and migration trends. Rent prices have been increasing, especially in Auckland and Christchurch, driven by strong migration inflows and limited rental supply. Despite potential shifts in migration trends, demand for rental housing remains robust. Recent data indicates annual rent growth of 6 to 7%, double the long-term average, with further increases likely in the near term. Preference for short-term fixed mortgages. A considerable proportion of new mortgage loans are being fixed for short durations, reflecting borrower confidence in current interest rate levels and a preference to avoid long-term commitments at higher rates, which is a smart choice. So I suspect that the majority of mortgage holders these days are now getting their advice from independent mortgage advisors, which is great to see. Approximately 46% of new loans in January were fixed for up to 1 year, which is the highest proportion since June 2021. This trend persists despite one-year mortgage rates being higher than longer-term rates, indicating borrower expectations of a peak in interest rates. So my personal opinion is you should always discuss with your mortgage advisor before you refix your interest rates so that they can have a look at your total lending portfolio and make sure that they give you the right advice at that time. Topic number two from Stuff on the 12th of March, how much does state housing really affect property values? Property investor Peter Lewis shared his experiences with Kāinga Ora, stating that he hasn't encountered difficulties with his two properties adjacent to Kāinga Ora houses. However, he noted that other investors have opted to sell their properties due to challenges associated with neighbouring Kaimaora properties. He emphasised the importance of finding the right person to contact within Kaimaora for effective communication and resolution of issues. Another investor, Steve Goody, revealed his strategy of avoiding properties near social or state housing developments. He explained that this decision stems from concerns about potential future challenges in reselling the property at a desirable price point. Goody expressed apprehensions about diminishing property values in the vicinity of social housing, which could adversely affect his investment returns. The apprehensions regarding the impact of social housing developments on property values are common among both first-home buyers and property investors. Despite this, experts' opinions on the matter are divided. Research conducted by Syed Hassan and Iqbal Saeed in Australia suggests that the introduction of new public housing can lead to a 6% decrease in property prices in relatively expensive suburbs, with no discernible impact in less expensive areas. They anticipate similar trends in New Zealand and expect these effects to persist in the long term. However, Daniel Watt's research on social housing in Christchurch presents a more positive outlook. Watt's thesis indicates that the introduction of social housing in the city has had a broadly positive effect on house prices. He estimates that within 3 years of social housing placement, surrounding house prices tend to rise by 9.1% to 14.7%. Additionally, Watt's analysis found no credible evidence of negative effects from social housing in any location. However, he suggests that the positive impact of social housing may vary depending on the wealth level of the neighbourhood. Brad Olson, the chief executive of Infometrics, referenced a development in Auckland's Glenfield to illustrate the impact of nearby Kaimaora developments on property values. Despite concerns, Olson noted that property values either increased or remained stable in the vicinity of the Kaimaora development. Gareth Stiven, general manager of strategy, finance and policy at Kaimaora, emphasised the long-standing presence of state and social housing in New Zealand cities and towns. Stiven noted that property values have continued to rise despite the presence of social housing. He cited studies indicating positive impacts on private property values near social housing due to modern design and construction methods employed in social housing developments. So in our personal experience, we haven't noticed a decrease in value or any difficulty finding tenants in properties that were close to social housing or Kaimaora properties, but understand that a lot of people have had significant issues as well. So it really does depend on the area and the types of tenants that are in those properties as to whether your particular property could be affected. So do your research on the area and, before you purchase, for sure. If you'd like to learn more about investing in property, join me at one of our free events called How to Succeed with Property Investing. I'll discuss strategies for successful investing from my perspective as a financial advisor and an experienced property investor. And these events are available live, online, or in person in our office in Ellerslie. Check out propertyapprentice.co.nz for upcoming dates and register today. We don't sell property, so it's all about increasing your knowledge to reduce your risk. If you've already been to one of our free events and would like to find out more about how we can help you to reach your financial goals, you can also book a no-obligation phone call or meeting with my husband, Paul Roberts, via the website at propertyapprentice.co.nz. Third topic for this week in review from the New Zealand Herald on the 14th of March, Labor claimed 346 landlords owned 200 plus properties, but official data can prove only one. Shocker. The government has criticised Labor for using inaccurate figures to claim that its policy of reinstating interest deductions for landlords would lead to a group of millionaire landlords, a claim reiterated since the election campaign. Labor's finance spokesperson, Barbara Edmonds, stated in a recent press release that the policy would benefit around 346 landlords with at least 200 properties each, totaling $464 million. However, Housing Minister Chris Bishop found that this claim cannot be supported by current data. The Ministry of Housing and Urban Development released data from an Official Information Act, or OIA, request, indicating that the number provided by Labor is likely incorrect. This number originated from a 2021 article on staff, which was included in an analysis by the CTU during the election campaign. The calculation relies on bond lodgement data to determine the number of properties for which individuals are responsible. This data does not reflect property ownership, but rather the number of properties for which bonds are lodged. The majority of entities lodging the most bonds are property management companies, not individual landlords. A breakdown of the data reveals that only 368 entities manage more than 200 active bonds, with most of them being property management companies. However, it's unclear whether these companies manage properties for individuals who own over 200 rentals. The dispute has become politicised, with Bishop criticising Labor for repeatedly using inaccurate information. Labor contends that it's utilised publicly available data during the election campaign, emphasising the need for the government to release better information before introducing policy changes. As of yet, no regulatory impact analysis has been published for the interest deductibility changes, which are being added to an existing tax bill. Adding a change like that to an existing tax bill is a normal way of making tax changes. Although Labor did publish an RIS when it created a new top tax bracket following the 2020 election, Edmund said that they used publicly available data during the election campaign, and if the government wants them to use their data, they should release it before tabling the bill. I would suggest that we should focus on the facts. Even if there were that number of landlords who owned that number of rental properties, why is that such a bad thing? The government cannot provide enough rental properties for all of the people that need to rent. So I think it's a little bit crazy. You're not going to be able to improve the financial position of people on lower incomes by punishing people that have created a bit of wealth for themselves. So I think people are looking at it from the wrong perspective. Landlords and tenants should have a symbiotic relationship, meaning that, you know, landlords need tenants and tenants need someone to own a property that they can rent. So instead of having this us and them mentality, we should all be on the same page and making sure that everyone that is providing rental properties are providing good quality rentals at fair market rent, okay? Because we need each other. And the benefit of investing in property is that you do create a bit of wealth for yourself over the long term, which helps reduce the need to be dependent on the government moving forward once you retire. Just my personal opinion. Anyway, topic number four from Stuff on the 12th of March. Here's where house prices dropped at year's start. National house prices have risen year on year for the first time since August 2022. With increasing listings meeting buyer demand, according to QV. However, Rotorua experienced the largest price drop in the quarter, while Queenstown continues to perform well. In Rotorua, house prices fell by 6.3% over 3 months, averaging $649,119. In contrast, Invercargill saw a smaller decline of 0.5%. Operations manager James Wilson attributes Rotorua's decline to reduced sales volumes and a shift towards lower value properties by first-time buyers. Bryn Parry from iSell Property in Rotorua believes the market has bottomed out, with lower-priced properties selling well but less competition for higher-priced homes. Economist Benji Patterson notes a 5.5% decrease in Rotorua's house prices in 2023, compared to 2.2% nationally, citing weaker returns in key sectors and high interest rates. On a national scale, property values rose slightly on average compared to a year earlier, with 1.3% increase in the 3 months to February. Queenstown saw a notable 4.2% rise in values over the quarter, now 8.8% higher than the previous year. Wilson attributes the surge in new listings to people postponing sales until the new year. He anticipates a continuation of the flattening trend due to diminishing demand, cooling competition, and economic challenges. Despite this, significant value declines are unlikely in the coming months. Wilson believes the increase in listings is not primarily due to mortgage pressure. Topic number five from One Roof on the 14th of March, on the hook for $150,000. holiday home sellers warned over hefty GST bills. Many homeowners who rent out their properties on short-term holiday platforms like Airbnb might not realise that they could face substantial tax liabilities upon sale, warns a leading tax expert, according to One Roof. According to Gareth Collard from EpsomTax.com, property owners earning over $60,000 annually from short-term rentals should register for GST. However, they may not be aware that they could owe 15% GST on their capital gains upon sale, which could amount to hundreds of thousands of dollars. Collard advises clients to keep their earnings below the $60,000 GST threshold whenever possible. He suggests that they reassess their situation once their earnings regularly exceed $5,000 a month to avoid unexpected tax bills. Some homeowners attempt to evade detection by tax authorities, hoping that the Inland Revenue Department or the IRD won't notice. Collard mentions encountering clients who prefer to remain under the radar, but warns that non-compliance could result in serious consequences during an audit. Ross Barnett from Lifetime receives inquiries from homeowners considering short-term holiday rentals. He highlights a case where a homeowner looking to rent their property on Airbnb while overseas could potentially owe $300,000 in GST on capital gains. Tax lawyer Julia Johnston cautions against voluntary GST registration, emphasising the high compliance costs. She warns that homeowners who deregister their properties for GST may still be liable for 15% GST on capital gains made during the registration period. Johnston also points out that certain properties categorised as mixed use may also incur GST liabilities upon sale. Buyers should also be aware of GST implications. Belinda Moffat, CEO of the Real Estate Authority, advises consumers to consult with tax professionals before committing to property deals involving GST. Currently, over 200 residential properties listed on One Roof specify that buyers may be responsible for paying GST on top of the purchase price. My advice would be, make sure that you get good tax advice from an accountant who understands property investing if you're looking at doing short-term rentals. They can be a great way to increase the rental return, but there are certainly implications that you need to be aware of. And if you're aware of them, you can work within the rules without getting yourself into trouble. Understanding key concepts like market analysis, financing options, risk management, and property management practices allows prospective buyers to effectively evaluate potential investment opportunities. If you'd like to take a step in the right direction, attend one of our free events called How to Succeed with Property Investing. During these two-hour workshops, we cover the most recent property market data. What's more, as an experienced property investor and a financial advisor, I'll be sharing valuable insights and expert tips to help you on your journey. Our free events cater to all levels of property investors and first home buyers. I'll also tell you more about how we help our clients achieve their financial goals. So if you're interested in finding out more about what we do, visit propertyapprentice.co.nz today to secure your spot and register for one of our events. If you're already a client of ours, feel free to send your friends and family along, because we do have a client referral program that we offer to our clients and the people that they refer also. Alternatively, if you'd like to book a no-obligation phone call or meeting with my husband, Paul Roberts, you can do that through our website as well. That's propertyapprentice.co.nz. Thanks for listening.